You are Locked On Pacers, your daily Indiana Pacers podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Pacer fans, welcome in. My name is Adam Friedman. As always, I'm a staff writer at IndyCornrows.com and the host of the Locked On Pacers podcast. On today's show, it's a Game 2 preview. Pacers beat the Cavs in Game 1, 98-80. Check out Tony and I's whole breakdown from that game on our Monday show. Listen to that still right now before today's game will be still relevant, thank God, because there's been no other games. Then on Tuesday, yesterday, Tony did a podcast with Chris Manning, which was a crossover pod. Check that out as well. Listen to all these pods. You get a nice little diet before this big game, too, that's going to be critical for the Pacers, not because they need to win it, but because if they do, it will just put the foot on the gas, you know, put Cleveland, back them into a corner, and really give the Pacers the edge they need. So quick break, and then we'll get to today's show. For today's show, I want to do something pretty simple. I'm basically going to do three things the Cavs might change in their game plan, three things the Pacers might change in their game plan, and then three issues I saw just in general with the games, with the Pacers and Cavs, and how it could affect, you know, going forward, is possible things to notice, basically. I named it issues, but it's basically just possible things to notice. So I'll just do a rotating thing. I'll go first one Cavs, one Pacers, so on, so on, and then I'll end with the possible things that you could see changing. So let's start with the Pacers because that's the team. That's the Locked On Pacers podcast. It's our team. And the first thing I like to see the Pacers adjust is getting into the pick and pop more with Turner. And if LeBron especially doesn't guard Collison, using Collison a lot more in that kind of play style. We saw it a couple times. I believe before the end of the half, the three-point shot from Turner was a pick and pop. There might have been one early in the first quarter and maybe another one in the fourth quarter. But it seemed like, you know, they ran it a couple times and then they went away from it. It made sense at the time because if you were going to use Darren Collison in the pick and pop, you obviously LeBron was on him. You don't want to use Darren Collison. And then every time they kind of set a screen with Vic, it was this all of a sudden double team, and Vic had to rush the pass out. So I understand why it wasn't run. You know, I think they run the pick and pop 5 to 8 times a game for Turner because he seems to hit the three a lot on it. But Turner was shooting pretty well from the game too. I thought he was sort of in his flow. I know he was only 1 of 2 from the three-point line, but, you know, I just thought – if Turner's hot, you just want to keep feeding that pick and pop for him because, you know, it's a kind of a play where defenses, unless they're like trained to look for it, sort of back off. I mean, you saw it a lot on the pick and roll where they would back off. Kevin Love was guarding Turner and he would sort of slip under the screen or try to fight through, and you have Turner standing wide open for a 3-point shot. And it's just kind of a thing where if Turner can keep developing that 3-point shot and keep hitting that pick and pop consistently, it makes him so much of a threat and makes defenses adjust, because if he, let's say, takes 5 threes and hits 4 of them, all of a sudden, that's the game. I mean, that changes the whole game in a way that is just unbelievable. The first thing I had the Cavs might adjust is I think they aren't going to start Jeff Green. Now, I don't have any indication besides the fact that Jeff Green stunk it up in Game 1, and I would not be completely surprised if Jeff Green continued to start and they try to ride him out for another game. But it looked pretty obvious. Who are they going to have to guard Oladipo? Jeff Green was the guy, supposedly, and he just did a terrible job. I mean, they were giving Depot all kinds of space. A great article about Caitlin Cooper, just how Oladipo carved up their defense. And it's because they were giving him so much space was part of it. They were just letting him, you know, start with 6 feet of space from the defender. They weren't really trying to guard him outside the three-point line. And then he could run, pivot, push step, pull up, whatever he needed to do, get to the rim, all that stuff. So that really starts with Jeff Green. And if Jeff Green does start, he'll guard Depot. And I just don't think that's a good matchup for the Cavs, but maybe Green can turn it on. You know, sometimes it's best to ride out these kind of players. We'll find out. But if Green doesn't start, I imagine it'll be J.R. Smith in his place. Smith, at least offensively, can go toe-to-toe with Vic at times if he's hot from the three-point line. I don't know if J.R.'s going to get hot again like he did. You know, it seems like every time the Pacers play the Cavs, J.R. has a little run where he hits 2 or 3 threes in a row and then kind of fades off. It kind of happened against what happened in Game 1. So, I don't know. We'll see what happens with J.R. But wouldn't be surprised if J.R. starts. I would be super surprised if, like, Jordan Clarkson started or somebody like that. I do think the Cavs maybe for a little while might rely on George Hill to guard Oladipo. But George Hill, you know, he doesn't look like the George Hill from the 2012-14 Pacers. He looks like a washed-up version. You know, it's a guy. George Hill's a guy who's had so many injuries that it just added up over the years. So, I don't know. Defensively, I don't know how the Cavs – I mean, unless LeBron really can guard Oladipo, which would be quite a – I think you don't do that unless you're down 2 or 3. You know, maybe if the Cavs lose tonight, they decide to put LeBron on him. But I don't know. I don't know how you step Oladipo, so We'll see if Jeff Green starts. Something to really look for. I imagine by the time you listen to this podcast, if you're listening in the evening, you'll probably know if JR has made the switch, but early morning you probably won't know yet, so just look on Twitter for that. I'm sure any of the guys who are at the game will be tweeting that. It'll be the big storyline. J.R. Smith starts, and if the Cavs win, it'll be cut. J.R. Smith starts, and Cavs win. J.R. has 18 points, whatever. Some kind of headline like that. The number two thing the Pacers might adjust to, and I think it really comes down to his foul trouble, and that's Sabonis. I actually thought, besides just we were taking tacky fouls, but just the constantly being in foul trouble, Sabonis had a pretty good game. I thought he was really effective when Vic got double-teamed on the pick. So Sabonis came up and set a pick for Vic, and he got double-teamed, and Vic would pass the ball to Sabonis. And Sabonis is such a good passer that he doesn't just immediately rush to the rim. You know, I think sometimes out of that pick and roll, if it's Young or it's Turner, they don't look for the extra pass. They just try to – Turner's like immediately shoot, which is fine. Already hit that point. But Young is going to just rush to the rim and shoots a float or whatever, and it works sometimes. But Sabonis has this unique ability where he – will actually think about passing the ball out. Bojan missed the shot, but he hit Bojan in the corner for a three. You know, and Sabonis still has the ability to get to the rim. I mean, we saw it when he had the dunk. But if Turner is struggling, you know, early and he can't make his jump shot, basically making him a non-factor in offense, Sabonis is kind of the second option, the counter to that if Turner's struggling or if the Cavs double team. And that's kind of my second thing I think the Cavs might do, and we're going to see a lot more of, is double teaming Vic, just plain double-teaming him. You look at the Pacers' box score, it was pretty much Vic just dominating. They let Bojan take a lot of shots, but it was basically 36 shots taken by Bojan and Oladipo. Everybody else was 9-9-4, and then you had Lance off the bench at 11, but Lance was going to do what he does. But I think the Cavs are going to really make anybody else beat the Pacers. And so that means you're going to see a lot of these just like random double-teaming of Vic when he has the ball at the top of the court, whatever it is. The good thing about Vic is he's so good in transition and on steals that he'll still get his points, so I wouldn't worry about that. But you might see in some of the half-court sets, Vic just get double-teamed right out of the way. And that will come down to now, Darren Collison, can he make the pass? Or can Sabonis or Turner make the pass? Or can they score and can hit their open shots? You know, the remedy to a Cavs double-team is just constantly going at them on the 4-on-3 and making layups or just getting easy buckets kind of thing. And I think the Pacers can do that. They showed a little bit of that. It's got to be on Depot to read the double team a little better. He struggled a couple times on reading the double team, but if Depot picks up the double team immediately, gets that ball immediately out, you know, the Pacers should be able to feast on cutting to the rim or a guy hanging out in the corner, some kind of 4-on-3 thing. I think that's where Sabonis and Turner really come in, because those are the two guys that will probably have the ball in the double team. I imagine they'll bring the double team with, like, Kevin Love and whoever's guarding him. I don't think they'll bring LeBron over to double team, but who knows. The last thing the Pacers might adjust, and I think this is an underrated factor that almost really killed them, was the bench. Stevenson played fine defense, but then on the offensive end, he had a little run. You know, it pushed them, whatever. But that third quarter was really just that all bench unit's fault. I don't know if they blame Corey Joseph for it, because Joseph just kind of, like, didn't take control. I think sometimes Joseph kind of lays back and lets Lance control the offense, which is just the worst thing on earth to ever watch. I mean, that third quarter, you saw a really early fourth quarter, and luckily McMillan just pulled Lance right away and put Vic back in. But when it becomes the Lance Stevenson iso ball show, it's painful to watch, and it's painful to know that they're probably going to blow it if he keeps doing that. And so I think it's a little bit on Corey Joseph to kind of take the ball away from Lance in a sense and just say, when Lance gets a rebound, pass it to me, we'll slow down the offense, reset. But also a little bit of it is that they just don't have really any superb playmaker outside of Vic. I mean, Lance is their second best, let's say, one-on-one playmaker, which is a little scary for this team, because if LeBron does play 44 minutes again, he's going to be playing against the bench. I mean, the only way the bench really wins is if Lance's defense is so good on LeBron that it doesn't matter. But even in the mid-third quarter, you saw where the Pacers maintained that, like, 20-point lead. They should have had a 35-point lead, and that's why it was able to be cut to 7. They didn't make any real, you know, addition to their lead. And some of that was the bench unit on the floor and just Lance just being Lance. And it was frustrating to watch. And so that's the one thing to worry about is are you going to get another good Lance game? Can Lance go 5-11, which is, like, 44% shooting, which is not terrible, but you know, if he goes 2 of 11, the Pacers might actually lose this game, because just the momentum and everything screws everything up. So something to watch at the bench. Hopefully McMillan will have a quick trigger with Lance. But, no, Lance is needed on the defensive end. His D, while it's not like he's stopping LeBron, he is slowing LeBron down. He's making LeBron work for everything, which is important in the grand scheme of the game, because if LeBron plays 44 minutes, you want him to be exhausted. I know he's an amazing athlete and whatnot, but he does get tired. And Lance, pushing him on defense every single time sort of helps LeBron wear him down just a little bit, just enough where you might get an extra advantage at the end of the game. So the last point I have on the Cavs they might adjust, I think it's Kevin Love. And I always think, why don't the Cavs use Kevin Love right, and they never use him right? I don't think in any games ever, but maybe finally LeBron realizes he needs a number two. You know, he doesn't have Kyrie anymore, and Love is his number two offensive guy, and hopefully Love will get, well, I guess if you're a Pacers fan, not hopefully, but I expect Love to get more than eight shots. It seems ridiculous that he's only taking eight shots a game for a guy who is a really good three-point shooter, and the fact is that he's being guarded by a guy like Turner, who Love can beat in space a little bit and is drawn to the hoop a ton because LeBron drives. So, I mean, you have to give props to the Pacers' defense on kind of putting Love in bad spots, but Kevin Love should honestly be able to kill this Pacers team, and I would not be surprised if he's taking between 10 and 15 shots and a good 10 threes a game. If he does that, that's going to be scary, but I'm not too worried just because, you know, you look at the Cavs' three-point shooting, they were 8 of 34, I believe, and you look at all the Pacers-Cavs games from the past, that's about what they shoot against the Pacers. The only time the Cavs didn't do that was the one time they won. But in four out of the five times they played this year, the Cavs have shot, I think, under 30% from three. So it's not just like a one-time anomaly thing. It's a consistent thing that Pacers force the Cavs into doing is shooting bad from three. And this game, too, is critical because if they win it, I think it really kind of pushes them to another level, the Pacers, I mean, to another level where this team could possibly sweep them. You know, now you don't have to win both games at home, where I think if they lose game two, you got to win both games at home. Otherwise, it kind of becomes the same series you think it would be. But a 3-1 lead, you just got to get two of your three home games. Like, it changes a lot of things and changes a lot of the way other guys react, especially if you can win the first game at home, then you just put the Cavs away. I mean, as much as LeBron says, came back from 3-1, he ain't come back from 3-0 with this team. This team is just not, you know, that's the way it is. I think LeBron needs to get this game too, and I think you'll see it from the Cavs. And that's why three things we're probably going to see in general from this game that are different than game one is the first one is that the Cavs will come out much more aggressive, much more urgent in a way that Pacer fans haven't seen in this Cavs team. I expect to see a LeBron James type that we saw with the Miami Heat when the Pacers went up 2-1 on them in 2012 or 13. You know, that time when they went up and he came out in that game four and he really came out this huge, like, we got to win this game. You know, if we don't win this game, this could be it. And I expect to see that from LeBron. The real question will be if the Pacers get, like, per se hit in the face, get, you know, the Cavs come out and score 25 points in the first 5 to 7 minutes. They did actually earlier this year in Indiana. Do the Pacers respond to that comeback? And they have all year. They've responded to being kind of hit in the face. And they've responded a lot when they get down and they get back. And then its question is, can they close out the game? And that's what it is. I think I expect it to be a much closer game, let's put it that way. I also worry that Oladipo's pull-up three won't be as reliable as it was in game one. Who knows? He might ride this thing for the whole playoffs. Maybe it's playoff Oladipo is the pull-up three the same way playoff Paul George kind of was like a guy who hit amazing amount of three-pointers all of a sudden when it came to the playoffs. But if Oladipo, let's say, goes 2 of 6 from pull-up threes instead of, I think he probably was like 4 of 6, that could change the game because momentum-wise, that type of three demoralizes teams because it's like, how do you stop a guy that can just get the ball and immediately shoot? It's the Steph Curry conundrum, kind of. So that worries me. Oladipo can't get that going, how that kind of fracture the offense. But again, they did win by 18, so there were other things that went well that could, you know, they didn't have to do everything. They don't do everything the same they did last time. Let's put it that way. They have to do just some of the same things well and close out the game well. And then the third thing I really was worried about was what happens if they continue to struggle from the free throw line and how that could affect them in a close game, because that's been a concern kind of sneakily all year is the Pacers missing big free throws late. I think they may have been able to pull out games they missed free throws in because their defense has been so good sometimes at the end of games. I think I don't know what the stats are, but I think if you look at it, they do a really good job, you know, shutting down teams at the end of games. But it's going to bite them in the butt at some point, and I'm afraid they're going to miss some free throw at a really important time. Let's say they have a 3-point lead and Oladipo's at the line, he misses one of two, or they have 2-point lead, makes one of two, whatever. It's a 3-point game, and the Cavs tie up, go to overtime, they lose. Like that's how important it could be, and I'm worried at some point it's going to bite them in the butt, but maybe, just maybe, it won't, and maybe, just maybe, they'll be able to hit their free throws in the clutch. I mean, Oladipo's free throw form doesn't seem broken. His ball always seems to kind of go in and pop out, so maybe just a slight adjustment. I don't know what it is, but, you know, knock on wood that doesn't become an issue, and, you know, it won't if they continue to play great defense, and that's the ultimate real X factor in this game is, can the Pacers bring the same defensive intensity for game two? You know, they came out game one like they were being disrespected across the league. I wonder if they have that same intensity, and maybe they do. This team has surprised me all year long. Every moment I look at it, this team is, I thought, oh, they're going to, they lost four in a row early in the season. Oh, this might be it. Oh, this team is now only 21-19, or this team that blew a game at Boston, that could flip the season, or they lost two games to Atlanta and Dallas, who were just bottom feeders in March, but they always seem to kind of recover from these little swoons, and they don't ever seem to, you know, they always get up off the mat. They get hit, and they always get right back up. So I'm encouraged by this team. I'm excited for game two. I think you should be excited for game two. I'm starting to talk myself into a Pacer win. You know, I'd probably favor the Cavs just because it's a game two on the road, but like I said, the Pacers win this game, it will really, really demoralize this Cavs team. There's an outside chance we could see a LeBron just throw in the towel kind of thing like he did in 2010 when the Cavs lost to the Celtics. As always, Tony and I will be back. Actually, not as always. Tony and I will be back tomorrow, Thursday, recapping game two. Be a great podcast. Our Monday show is doing incredibly well, so we're excited that everybody out there is enjoying this podcast and excited about the Pacers and all that stuff. It's a huge momentum for us, so we'll be recapping game two. We'll be back again on Friday with a game three preview, and then we'll be back on the weekend sometime with also a game recap and a game preview for game four. That's all I know right now because Pacers could sweep this series, so I'm only planning out the first four games. That's all I got for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. As always, you can follow us on Twitter at Locked On Pacers, me at FreemanAdam5, and my co-host Tony East at TEastMBA. As always, leave us a 5-star review on Spotify, Stitchers, iTunes, wherever you get our podcast. Leave us a 5-star review. If you listen to this podcast at this point on a Wednesday, you clearly like this podcast. Tweet at us any questions you got, any suggestions for the show, whatever you want. We'll respond. We like all comments. Some we think are dumb, but we like most of our comments. That's it for today's Locked On Pacers podcast. Have a great rest of your day.